The following is a community affairs presentation from the Ulster County Health Department. This is the Healthy Ulster Radio Show, a weekly presentation exploring community health and sustainability with guests representing a broad spectrum of community partners working to make Ulster County the healthiest in New York State. This program is sponsored by the Health Alliance of the Hudson Valley in Kingston, a member of the WMC Health Network.
Good morning and welcome to Healthy Ulster Radio. My name is Vincent Martello. I'm Director of Community Health Relations for the Ulster County Department of Health and Mental Health. My co-host, Dr. Carol Smith, is out of town today, and so I'll be going it alone with two very special guests. I have with me Michael Iapoci, who's Commissioner of the Ulster County Department of Social Services. Michael was appointed in 2012 by County Executive Mike Hine. Prior to that, he served as an attorney for the Department of Social Services for 19 years. Also with us today is Jacqueline Arsenic. She's Safe Harbor Coordinator for the Ulster County Department of Social Services, where she's tasked with creating a coordinated community response to youth trafficking. And prior to this position, she served as a crime victim specialist for Family Services, and she did some volunteer work in Kenya, working with women in distress. Jacqueline holds two master's degrees in industrial psychology and women's studies. Welcome.
Thank you.
And good morning, Ben.
Good morning. January this month is National Human Traffic Awareness Month, so this is really a timely topic for us to be discussing. But let's first start with the basics. Mike, if you would, could you tell us about the Safe Harbor Program, how it came into existence?
Sure, Ben. The Safe Harbor Program is an initiative that's sponsored by the New York State Office of Children and Family Services, and they started this initiative to focus on raising awareness about child trafficking, both labor and sex trafficking of children throughout New York State. And their goal has been to sign up all of the county Department of Social Services with an emphasis on giving each county the support that's needed to be able to raise awareness in counties about child trafficking, educate the community, and one of the most important priorities is training service providers and law enforcement. It's been something that Office of Children and Family Services has really devoted a lot of time and energy to. And it's been something that they arrived at doing as part of a federal initiative that was arrived at after legislation around preventing sex trafficking and strengthening families. So it's kind of a continuum around a subject matter area that's been gaining a lot of attention in the media and getting a lot of momentum. And I think the thing that we've experienced here in Ulster County since joining 3 years ago is that, you know, we've learned that it's something that, you know, previously was not on a lot of people's radar. We've learned a lot about the subject matter along the way. We're winding down our third year of a five-year program, so we'll be continuing to be a safe harbor county for 2018 and 2019. And I think the fact that OCFS has been supporting this initiative and established a five-year time frame, really indicates that they recognize that time needed to be devoted to educate communities about this subject matter and to try to create an infrastructure. So we're really proud to be a safe harbor county. We feel like we've had a lot of great accomplishments during the first 3 years, and we're really interested in sharing what we've been able to arrive at with the community.
Mm-hmm. And just out of curiosity, has it not been on the radar because of the nature of the trafficking business, where it's, you know, it's underground and kept so secretive, and then therefore it doesn't really get much publicity at all?
I think that could be part of it, and it's also that we've learned over the course of the last 3 years that people have different perspectives about what trafficking is and what it involves. Mm-hmm. I know that Jackie goes into the community and does a lot of training, so she could probably share some of her insights about why it's not something that people generally had an awareness about.
I think people have a very narrow idea of what trafficking is based on, movies like Taken. They really don't understand how broad this issue really is. Just getting back to, the Safe Harbor Program, our goals are to raise awareness and educate the community, service providers, and professionals about trafficking of youth below the age of 18, although we do touch upon trafficking of adults as well, but also to gather data. So what does trafficking look like here in this area? Because that's always a major concern. We have a prevention program program as well. So we have a prevention educator that works with youth. And so those are the goals of the program.
And certainly having an educated public and
right, and so they know what the red flags are.
You have that many more eyes and ears out there to be aware of what's going on. And Jackie, so tell us a little bit more about the Safe Harbor Law. Mike touched on it a bit.
Sure. So, I mean, I'm just in general, human trafficking, I think we can say, is the practice of exploiting people as commodities and conditions of sexual and labor servitude. That's a general definition of trafficking. It's $150 billion industry. It's the fastest growing criminal industry, and there are several laws at the state and federal level that address it. But safe harbor laws enacted in 2008 are really geared towards youth under the age of 18, and they exist to divert youth who've been involved in commercial sexual exploitation to specialized services as opposed to the juvenile delinquency and the criminal justice systems.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And how does Safe Harbor define the sexually exploited child?
Okay, so Safe Harbor defines a sexually exploited child as any person under 18 years of age who has been subject to sexual exploitation as a result of their loitering for the purpose of prostitution or their engagement in an offer to exchange sexual conduct in return for something of value. And exchanging sexual conduct in return, it could be anything like food, clothing, a place to stay, drugs, a fee, promises of those items, protection from another person. So anytime a youth is exchanging a sex act for something of value, that is considered trafficking. Mm-hmm. And it's also often referred to as survival sex. That is the term that we use. A major driving force behind this is homelessness.
And another thing that we've learned over the course of the time that we've been a Safe Harbor County is that the reason behind having Office of Children and Family Services involved is that this activity is also part of the larger child abuse. It really is child abuse when you boil it down. It's under that umbrella. So that's why it's properly something that Office of Children and Family Services focused on. And what we also see is that children that have had traumatic experiences as a result of either abuse or neglect or some other incident are generally much more vulnerable and susceptible to being exploited and taken advantage of. And one of the things that is so important about gathering data is that we've also learned, and this was something that happened at the federal level, that children that come into the care and custody of social services departments nationwide become much more vulnerable just because of their circumstances and the fact that they might be in placements at residential facilities or in foster homes. And because of the issues that they're contending with, they generally have greater susceptibility. Mm-hmm. So that's something that we're also really trying to focus on addressing. And our prevention program is really aimed at trying to educate all of the youth in our community so that maybe there's greater awareness.
So does that have to do with low self-esteem issues as a result of those traumas too? What percentage of these kids might be, say, runaways?
We're going to talk about that, I think, in a little mm-hmm. while. I just wanted to mention the different forms of commercial sexual exploitation. So as Mike said, sometimes people get confused between commercial sexual exploitation and child abuse. What's the difference? There has to be a commercial exchange going on. So like he said, commercial sexual exploitation trafficking is one form of child abuse. Then you have the forms of commercial sexual exploitation, which are sex tourism, so traveling to another destination with the intention of exploiting a youth, child pornography. So these two are billion-dollar industries facilitated by technology such as the internet, which vastly expands choices available to buyers and creates nearly undetectable and instantaneous transactions. We're also talking about stripping, exotic dance, and child sex trafficking.
Yikes. And I think Mike said the number was $150 billion a year.
Mm-hmm.
That's enormous.
And it's probably higher than that, yeah.
Wow.
And it's the fastest growing, and it'll soon surpass arms and drugs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we talked about some of the risk factors with youth and why some kids are more vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to elaborate on that a bit?
Yeah, certainly. That's definitely one of the reasons, again, why we're involved. And I think that
I think it's safe to say that all youths are vulnerable to trafficking for a variety of different reasons. They experience feelings of being misunderstood. They're insecure. They desire romantic relationships. They want independence. They're taking risks. They want nice things. But then you add these additional layers of vulnerability, and you wind up with high risk populations. So a high risk population could be a youth who has a history of sexual or physical abuse, for example, a youth who doesn't understand boundaries. So they think that anyone can just take away. So you could also have a youth who's been maybe sexually abused in the home and has now run away from home to get away from the abuse and finds themselves in this survival sex situation. So that's a risk factor, a high risk factor. There's also youth, like he mentioned before, with a history of living, you know, in foster care or interaction with the child welfare system. 85% of youth who've been trafficked have had some type of interaction with the child welfare system. Also, we're talking about runaway, homeless, impoverished, and throwaway youth. So, throwaway youth are youth who have been, that go missing and are never reported. But as I mentioned before, homelessness is a major driving force behind survival sex. We have LGBTQ youth who are highly susceptible to trafficking. They make up 40% of the homeless population. 50% face a negative reaction when they come out to their parents or guardians. And 26 are forced out of their home. So again, in this survival sex situation. We have unaccompanied minors who cross the border without a parent or guardian. And then you also have youth with intellectual and developmental disabilities who are at very high risk of trafficking.
Wow, there are a lot of risk factors there. And say for families, who are struggling either financially or otherwise in raising kids and in under stress themselves, what can families do to help minimize that? What are the mitigating factors?
I think it's generally a matter of being as aware as you possibly can about what the activities are that your children are involved in or gravitating to. Mm-hmm. Jackie mentioned earlier that the internet as a medium that is, so pervasive in our society now for a lot of, beneficial activities is, a place to always be particularly aware of and informed about.
It's a wide open window.
Just being educated about the red flags associated, but I think also it's important to realize it's not just the parents' responsibility, that there are a lot of, structural and social and systemic factors that contribute to this situation.
So it's a community.
So, discrimination, like we mentioned before, the LGBTQ community experiencing discrimination. These are kids that are seeking sexual solutions to non-sexual problems.
Right. Fascinating, really. And we'd like to hear more details, but right now we're going to take a short break. You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio. We'll be back after this.
Health Alliance, a member of the Westchester Medical Center Health Network, is proud of the investments we're making at Health Alliance Hospital, Mary's Avenue Campus, Broadway Campus, and Margaretville Hospital. Now, we're back in the network with Blue Cross Blue Shield, for you, with the highest quality care you expect from the local doctors you know and trust. For questions, call 1-800-613-6617. WMC Health and Health Alliance, advancing care here.
Welcome back. You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio. My guests today are Michael Iapoci, who's Commissioner of the Ulster County Department of Social Services, and Jackie Arsenik, who is Director of the Safe Harbors Program. And Jackie, before the break, we talked a little bit about the stereotypes surrounding youth who may be trafficked. Can you talk a little bit about those and why that might not be the case?
I think a lot of people gain their education about trafficking through movies like Taken, and they provide these very narrow understanding of what trafficking looks like. So here's these young girls who are kidnapped and taken to another country and forced into prostitution. That's just not always the way it is.
It's a Hollywood version.
Yeah, that's the Hollywood version, and that does happen. But the majority of cases that involve youth and trafficking involve fraud and coercion. So fraud is basically a misrepresentation of the facts. So, hey, I've got this great job modeling job for you, or, let's be in this relationship. I'm in love with you. And then it turns into, hey, can you do this for me once? Or if you love me, you'll do this for me. And then there's the coercion, which is a way to keep someone in the situation once they're in it. So maybe they have nude pictures of this person and they say, hey, if you don't do this for me, I'm going to show this to the school, or I'm going to show this to your parents. So it's fraud and coercion. And there are different routes and reasons that youth enter into it on their own sometimes. And it's hard to face. And it doesn't mean that they're not vulnerable and that we shouldn't try to help them. But, some youth may enter it to fulfill emotional needs that they're not being met at home. These are youth that don't come from, families that have provided them with the love and affection and support that they've needed, so they seek it elsewhere.
I think the other thing is that no youth are immune from the possibility because of the fact that many youth that might be involved in activity like this may not even realize that they're being exploited or taken advantage of because they've been manipulated or misled to become involved in a relationship where they were really just seeking to have positive reinforcement or connection with another person. And the individuals involved in trafficking youth, they're unscrupulous. They're predatory.
Slick and sophisticated.
They're scamming, absolutely taking advantage. And they're also very skilled at identifying why a particular youth might be more vulnerable.
And they look for those, you know, like on Facebook, for example, if a youth is posting, I really can't stand my foster parents and I can't go to this party. And that's what they're looking for. These kids, they accept everyone, right? They've got 1,000 friends. They don't know who they are. And these traffickers will try to make a connection based on those vulnerabilities and say, oh, I went through that myself. Mm-hmm. But we also have to keep in mind that there's not always going to be a trafficker. It could be just the youth and the buyer. And the buyer is also considered a trafficker.
Mm-hmm. And there's a subsection of this called labor trafficking. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. And even though the law does not mention labor trafficking, we do provide services to youth who are victims and survivors of labor trafficking. Now, you know, it's important to distinguish that the Department of Labor does allow youth to work in a variety of circumstances based on what type of work they're doing, you know, the hours that they're working, you know, whether school's in session. But when we're talking about labor trafficking, we're talking about individuals who are being forced or, you know, manipulated for the purpose of subjection to involuntary servitude, peonage, debt bondage, or slavery. So debt bondage, for example, someone, maybe a youth who came from another country and was smuggled in. But then the smuggler said, hey, you know what? You can't leave because you've accrued all this debt along the way. And now it becomes a trafficking situation because this person is never going to be able to pay off that money. And so you've got this trafficking situation, and now they're using threats to call immigration to keep them in that situation. So there's the fraud, and there's the coercion. That's the coercion, is keeping them there. The fraud was, oh, I'm going to take you over, and you're going to have this great job. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's labor trafficking. I don't know if that helped to clarify.
The other dynamic that can also unfold in the labor trafficking scenarios, as well as the sex trafficking ones, is just the perception by the individual being trafficked that the trafficker, you know, has this leverage and this credibility. And, you know, because they're fearful that they don't have anywhere to turn and that they can't ask for help, and that this individual who's trafficking them appears to be in a position of, you know, some stability in the community
Money,
where they
power,
are.
Power, whatever
and
it is.
They don't really feel like they have many alternatives or anywhere to be able to turn to for help. And it just continues. And it's a cycle that's really impossible to have someone be able to break out of. So that's why, you know, being on the show today, talking about this, and making our community aware of situations that can exist like this in our very own community is really important.
And so if these exploitation trafficking relationships are very self-contained, relatively, you know, contained, how does one in the community, or a professional or parent or other person in the community, recognize that there might be something amiss, that there's, what are the red flags?
If there's a lot of red flags, and a lot of them overlap with other crimes like domestic violence and sexual assault. But we'll see the general red flags. If a youth is under 18 and they're engaging in commercial sex regardless of force, fraud, or coercion, so they're exchanging a sex act for something of value, that is trafficking. If they're using street slang maybe for sex work, so if you Google street slang for sex work, you'll see a whole bunch of terminology that will come up. For example, squaring up means wanting to get out of the life, and the life is being involved in a commercial sex. They may have a significantly older partner that they're spending a lot of time with, someone who is very controlling, who doesn't allow them to speak for themselves. Again, overlap there with domestic violence. They may be reluctant to discuss how they make money, where they live, how or why they came to the United States. That's typical of labor trafficking. The youth may be working more than they're in school. They may be coming to school just to eat. They may be falling asleep in the back of the classroom, and these are changes that happen immediately. They don't happen gradually. So that's why it's really important for school staff to be trained. Also, excessive and pathological attachment to cell phones. I think we could all say that maybe we have that issue. But, you know, we're really talking about the anxiety. You have to look at the anxiety that's associated with that attachment to the cell phone, because the trafficker may be monitoring them at all times. So if you're talking to the youth and their phone's blowing up and there's anxiety and they have to get back to this person, what's going on? Also, inexplicable appearance of excessive cash or expensive items. You know that this person does not have a job. Their parents can't afford that iPhone and all those new clothing. Where is it coming from? You know, where is it coming from? So those are just some general ones. There's also a lot of other ones that you can go to our website. If you Google Safe Harbor Ulster County, our website will come up, and you can find all those red flags that are associated with trafficking.
Mm-hmm. So what's the model of how Safe Harbor delivers delivers services? Is it on a case management basis, or are there other programs and services that are associated with that? Can you talk a little bit about
that? So, I mean, there's the aspect we mentioned before where, you know, we my role really is to educate and raise awareness in the community and gather data for OCFS. But we also have, you know, we believe in prevention. We think it's really important to not just react, but to prevent this from happening. So we have a prevention educator who goes out in the community and works with youth and educates them about the dangers of trafficking, about the red flags, how to stay safe on the internet, what does a healthy relationship look like, you know, healthy body image, things like that. She also does our case management. So if we get a referral to the program, she works with the youth and helps, you know, to build their self-confidence and to, you know, work with them through these stages of change that they may be going through in, you know, contemplating leaving a trafficking situation, because not all youth consider themselves to be trafficked, regardless of whether they are or not. They might not see it that way. They may say, well, this is my boyfriend and he cares about me, you know, regardless of all of that. So, Mike, you might want to mention.
Yeah, that leads into another major area of activity, which is around the training that's being undertaken of our service providers, law enforcement. Recently, the Department of Health just implemented legislation requiring all healthcare providers to have mandated screening and assessments of patients. And in our child welfare system, we have a mandated screening. We've also provided a lot of the service providers and partners that we work with tools to be aware of the red flags. Mm-hmm. Because to the degree that a lot of your listeners today might not have the opportunity to really have the kind of contact with youth who they observe, you know, the school systems is also a major partner in this effort.
So we work very closely. People,
anybody who's involved in activity where they're engaging with youth on a regular basis, who can make observations about the red flags that Jackie talked about, and who can maybe begin to connect the dots, and who can then make a referral to our program. And your question about the types of services that we provide, we're really fortunate here in Ulster County to have a great infrastructure of services that already existed that was responding to the needs that youth have. You know, we're going to see children that are part of our system in our care and custody, but we're also going to get referrals for kids that are not in our system. Mm-hmm. And what we're going to try to do is come together and have meetings and discuss maybe what kind of assistance and support we can provide. And each case is going to be very unique. Right. It really has to be evaluated based on what the underlying activity was. There's principles behind Safe Harbor that are really important too, about trying to engage youth where you find them, you know, forge trusting relationships, not dictate to youth what they have to do.
You can't force services on a youth if they don't want to do them. They're not going to do them. So you have to meet them where they're at, unfortunately.
But I guess it's important, you know, with any complex public health issue, to have an integrated and coordinated approach among the whole community, recognizing that everyone has a role to play.
Yeah, definitely.
And we've been able to, you know, form a critical team that includes partners and representatives from other agencies that are, you know, engaging with youth. Mm-hmm. We also expect to see, with the Raise the Age legislation that's being implemented, that, you know, some of the youth who had been previously incarcerated are going to be diverted.
That's
and
right.
We're going to have an increase in that population, and the likelihood is that we'll probably see more incidences around trafficking referrals as a result of that as well. So the timing's really good.
Because youth may not come out and say that they're being trafficked, but I feel like those are the cries for help, is when you see them come through probation. You see them committing these behavior, you know, they have these behavioral problems. Those are their cries for help.
What has the trend been in Ulster County in terms of cases that you've seen, or at least that have been identified?
Mm-hmm. We've identified cases as a result of referrals that we've received as part of cases that we get referrals from the State Central Registry on. Mm-hmm. We've also received referrals from service providers. Mm-hmm. And the reality is that we are arriving at delivering services, and it's something that I think that as awareness continues to be raised and our communities educated, we're going to see more of.
And finally, where do people go? Who should they call if they suspect that trafficking is going on?
Well, I mean, in general, for more information, or, you know, if during the day, if it's not an emergency and they want to know more about the program, they could always call me, Jackie Arsenic. I'm the Safe Harbor Coordinator. My number is 340-3927.
And then if it's an individual that just wants to reach out to get general information or make a referral, you can also call Crime Victims Assistance Program, which is 845-340-3443, or Family of Woodstock's hotline at 845-338-2370, or text Family of Woodstock at 845-679-2485. And both Crime Victims Assistance Program and Family of Woodstock are partners on our critical team, and all of their staff are trained in being able to respond to referrals around trafficking.
Sounds great. Really critical and important and worthwhile work. Thank you both for all the terrific work you do on behalf of our community.
Thank you so much for having us on the show. We really appreciate that.
We appreciate it. Thanks so much, Ben.
You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio. Tune in next week for more great information that you can use to keep yourself, your family, and your community healthy and strong.
You've been listening to the Healthy Ulster Radio Show, a community affairs presentation from the Ulster County Health Department, sponsored by Health Alliance of the Hudson Valley in Kingston, a member of the WMC Health Network. Thanks for listening, and be sure to join us for another edition of the Healthy Ulster Radio Show next week.